Blog Talk Radio.
Because we want to stay alive,
and then
toward
Chaim,
instructions of life, toward Chesed, instructions of kindness, toward Rachmim, instructions of mercy. This is Soul Class number 191, getting to the heart of the matter, tutorial number 34. We continue with international human rights activist Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Goldsack, who, along with his wife of valor, Chana Tova, are embarking on an ongoing journey. What is that journey, you might ask, blessed souls? To assist distinguished children and adults for more than 21 years and they started their efforts in the USA. Now the Goltzes are taking it to the next level. The holy city of Jerusalem, located in Eretz HaKodesh, the holy land of Israel. In fact, with the blessings of the Most High, Rabbi Goldstein in a few moments will be speaking to us live from Yerushalayim, Eretz HaKodesh, the holy city of Jerusalem, to talk about matters of the heart, to reveal love for distinguished souls, enclosed in distinguished bodies. Meanwhile, a humble prayer that we merit in our days is part of preparing the entirety of creation in this generation for each and every nation, that the human family experience will firmly instill within all of our hearts the desire to keep more people alive with the strength to redeem kinsmen and kinswomen in a manner they shall declare by the hand of the Most High they have been elevated to the level of freedom, true freedom, from all forms of degrading stigma. And I hear a beeping, a horn beeping from Jerusalem. That must mean we must have Rabbi Goldstein on the line. Good morning or good afternoon to you, Eliezer.
Good afternoon and good morning to you from good afternoon from here and good morning to you there. Yes, I am out on the streets of Yerushalayim. What an amazing place. I have to tell you, don't take this personally, anybody living in New York, but the air here is so much lighter, so much purer, so much cleaner, so much fresher. It's just an amazing thing. I'm sitting up here almost a mile high. You know, we say you go up to Yerushalayim, and I'm literally, this is the ultimate high, you know. You sit up here in Yerushalayim. Yeah, I got to tell you something interesting. I didn't know about this. A couple weeks ago, on the 17th of Tammuz, right? So everybody has to go down to which is the day that the outer walls of Yerushalayim were breached with an ever so small crack, but we remember that day and we acknowledge it by fasting, because just the smallest crack in our outer wall can lead to complete destruction of a human being. And so we fast on that day as a remembrance. And one of the customs is, if you go down to the old city any time that you haven't been there for 30 days, as some say a year, then you have to tear a kriya, which means you have to tear your shirt or you know, part of your garment to acknowledge the fact that, you know, we missed. It's like mourning, you know, to tear the kriya on a garment. They were giving out free shirts to thousands and thousands and thousands of people that were going down to the Kaisel just so that they could put on a shirt and be sure to tear kriya, so that nobody would go away thinking, you know, well, maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't, maybe this is, you know, the only shirt I have or whatever, you know. So they went down there. Is that an amazing Ahavas Yisrael? They went out and they literally bought thousands of shirts and handed them out to every single person who went to the Kaisel and needed to tear kriya. Isn't that an amazing Ahavas Yisrael story? So there you see that everybody was able to go and without, you know, worrying about it. And I'll tell you, you know, we're always talking about, I just want to catch you up on a couple of quick things and then we'll get to the heart of the matter. and actually, I am calling you from the heart of the world. You know that. So the thing is that if you go down, if you have an insurance policy, a health insurance policy here in Israel, right? The health insurance companies recognize the level of stress that we live in under here in Israel, and so therefore, if you want to go to a spa, for example, for a period of time, for a day or two, or you want to go to to get some alternative treatment for a massage or something like that, that's included in your policy. And, you know, I was thinking, wow, you know, we have an entire country there in America and Europe and Asia, the people that are living. I think if everybody went in and got a massage and spent a day in a spa, I don't think anybody would want to fight anymore. You know, I think we would be able to, you know, tone down the intensity level of the stress in people's lives. So that pretty much covers my other than the fact that, you know, Syria said that they won't use any of their chemical the chemical cache that they've discovered on any of their own people, but they would not hesitate to use it on you know who. Us.
Well, no.
Okay.
I mean, when I lived in Eretz Israel, Eliezer, I heard from a chassid that it was said of them that they are Rosh HaNachash, which we're not going to translate, and we understand what that means. They just,
right.
I wish upon them, like the people of Nineveh, to do tshuva, and that things should improve in the Middle East.
Amen. Amen. And we need some seichel here, but I want to tell you, when you see the level of anti-Semitism, you know, they hide it behind anti-Israel, but when you see the level of anti-Semitism on the Arab television here, it is absolutely astonishing. It is so deep-rooted. They literally had a situation on a television program here in that was broadcast from Cairo, an Egyptian television program, where one fellow thought that the lady that was on the program with him was an Israeli and that the program was being broadcast to Israeli television. He got
mm-hmm.
up and punched the lady.
Wow.
And then she, when she discovered, you know, that it was, the whole thing was like a candid camera kind of thing. But when she discovered what she was no longer upset with him for punching him. She was now, you know, went on a tirade against the Jews and the Israel and that the hopes of the Holocaust and so forth and so on. I have to tell you, it's so deep rooted that I'm even with all of my hope and positive outlook on, you know, the way things ought to be, are, should be, could be. I must tell you, I'm a little, I'm feeling a little bit of the negativity, and it's so pervasive that, you know, I never noticed it before as deeply as I'm seeing it today. Anyhow, let us move forward with our project, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking care of the rest of that stuff.
Yes. Eliza, I'd like to share just a couple of points. Number one, that we are
sure.
in the 9 days, which is a period of intense spiritual reflection and introspection. Today also, I should say this, at the beginning of the Rosh Chodesh Av, the month of Av, we see the remembrance of the ascension of Aaron HaKohen, the older brother, the firstborn of Amram and Yocheved. And he was known, and the Rebbe talks about this, that we should be the students of Aaron to love peace and to pursue it. And as well, 5 days later, we see today is the Yahrzeit, the day of remembrance of the great Arizal, Rabbi Yitzhak Yure,
right.
Yitzhak ben Shlomo. And the whole idea, what Rabbi mentioned, is that the Hasidic movement stands on one foundation alone, that the Arizal said that we can reveal this great wisdom, which is Kabbalah in the modern days, it's the Hasidus. And I found an article which I think ties into your work, Eliezer, to get us going. This is an article
okay.
I found on Chabad.org by a Dr. Arthur Seltzer, who is a practicing holistic practitioner down in South America. And I hope to send him a copy of our show. He is involved in acupuncture, naturopathy, and holistic nutrition. He lives in Cape Town and teaches Jewish meditation and Kabbalistic
That's South
kitchen.
Africa, not South America, sir.
South Africa. So he's one of Unzer mentioned. I'd like to
Cape
read you
Town.
A paragraph.
I mean, look, you know, in the time of Mashiach, I suppose things would be like a checkerboard.
Yeah, I guess. So this is what Dr. Seltzer had to say. I'm just going to read one paragraph to you. I'd like you to comment with your expertise in the field of empowering distinguished human beings, distinguished souls, and distinguished bodies. And it goes like this. He starts off by saying this, Eliezer. He quotes from Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23. Above all that you watch over, well attend to your heart, for out of it emerges the issues of life. And the paragraph he wrote, I'm going to share with you now, and I'm looking forward to your comments on this. Through the theory and observation of cardioenergetics, and through the technology of heart transplantation, we witness the emergence of a new way of looking at the heart and its energy. This new view is based on quantum perspective of energy and multiple levels with which the heart can be perceived and experienced. In effect, the study of cardioenergetics provides us with new and clear insights into the teachings of Kabbalah and Hasidism concerning the heart and its ability to elevate the universe to the transformation of our own hearts. Both cardioenergetics and our sages understand, despite differences in time, context, language, and intent, that we establish essential harmony within ourselves through the heart. This harmony reflects the harmonies of above and below inherent within the creation. See, Eliezer, since you are speaking live from the heart of creation, can you please give us insights on this idea of the energy emanating out of our hearts?
Well, first of all, we know that that animals, when they feed their young, their udder and the method of feeding their young is from the lower part of their body, and that women, human women that nurture and nurse their children, it comes from the heart. The milk is very definitely correlates with the location and site on the body. That the breasts are right next to the heart, and that part and parcel of only of the nutrition that a child is receiving is also that the heart of the mother is transferred to the heart of the child. And from that very early point, then we move forward to understanding that, you know, emotions come from the seat of all emotions, and the seat of all excitement comes from the heart. Now, that can be used in two different ways, as we've discussed before and many times. In Hasidus, it explains that the heart, while being the seat of love, is also the seat of averas, of making sins. How do you call averas there? Not just sins.
Transgressions.
Transgression, that's a better word. Sin sounds so biblical. Anyhow, so the thing is like this, that, I mean, from our perspective, the heart is the seat of all energy, all positive energy and all negative energy. So we have to be careful, because in the heat of a moment, that energy could turn to doing some form of transgression, because of the potential for the emotion to build and build and build. We are talking here about the energy that comes from the electric energy that comes from a heart that is developing. It's a hidden force within creation, that electrical energy, and the heart fills and fulfills the five senses. In other words, it's through the senses that we perceive the world in a physical way, and it is through the heart and its connection to the brain and to the neshama, to the soul, and to the all the aspects and levels of a soul, that we reach out to the world and we approach the world. And if we approach the world with a positive attitude, and if we have a positive approach, then our heart is pumping and infusing our body with all of this positive energy. And the negativity that exists within us is only existing there because our thought processes allow it to happen. If our thought process is such that we are thinking and feeling positive energy, then we will reach out to the world and we will see the world as a positive. I think we finished last week. We talked about the concept of thinking ourselves into a good situation. We have people who can think themselves well. I saw an amazing demonstration of the power of a brain, of a mind, and a heart to think ourselves into a good situation, into positive energy, where mm-hmm. a woman had a cesarean, delivered a baby cesarean on hypnosis alone. There was no
wow.
medication of any kind given to her. And afterwards, she said that she felt fine. And, you know, of course, the post-hypnotic suggestion was that she would feel fine and she would experience no, you know, none of the side effects that are normal, that are common to people who've had a baby with, you know, with a cesarean, and all of the medications go with it. The heart is the energy by which we infuse our senses, the blood that it courses through our body and our bodies and reaches out, is an amazingly powerful tool that we need to learn to A, control, and B, not to necessarily only succumb to it, but to follow that energy. And the energy is an energy that allows us to feel the, you know, it says very, very obvious when Pusik here is Kamayama Panama Panam Kingleva Adamaladam, that as it says in the Tanya, that just like the face, one face reflects the image of another's person's face, that means that when you look in the face of someone else and you see the expression on their face, you can read their face clearly. Why? Because you've seen that same expression on your face. And the source of that is the heart. The heart is the energy that is engulfing the entire essence of your being that is reflected in your face. So you're from one face to the other, you're seeing that that essence clearly delineated in a way that if you would look in the water, a reflection of your own face in the water, you would know exactly how you feel. And so therefore, when you look in the person's face, you can tell where their heart is, what they're feeling, what their emotions are, and what that energy is and where it's coming from. We have the ability to use our senses to sense, to understand where and what the people are around us, where that energy is coming from, what the source of their energies are, and we derive a great deal of light from one another just from the effects of our emotions, and those emotions are the causation. How is it? Good? Excellent. Yeah. You know, everybody's walking around eating their milchik meals here, and they walk by and it all looks so good. Anyhow, so that's where we're holding now. We're holding in a place where what we want to do is we want to fulfill one of the things that cannot be touched by even our hearts is beauty. The beauty that exists in the world and within us cannot be touched by simply saying, okay, you know, I when you look into somebody's face and you see the beauty, you can experience the beauty, but you can't touch it. Beauty can't be
right.
touched. It can be experienced,
right.
And in that way we can touch each other when we see the beauty in each other. But the beauty that exists within each one of us is a very unique and very infinite kind of an energy. Each one of us has to recognize that we have an outer wall. We all have an outer wall, and as I alluded to in the very beginning of our discussion here, that if you allow that outer wall to be breached, then it could all collapse, but it could also allow, you know, sometimes we have to let the walls, our own walls that we use to overprotect ourselves from the world, we have to allow those to come down sometimes to simply allow other people into our lives to see the beauty that exists within each one of us and to experience the love that exists within us, and to see that there is a peacefulness in that, and it is not as scary as some people might think. We have people that, you know, are having a very difficult time in their lives, and oftentimes experience the energy of their senses as a protective shell rather than an exploration of the world. And therein lies really the proper use of our senses. In terms of a Torah perspective, we need to use our senses to reach out to others and to allow others in, but not to breach the wall around us that protects us from all of from all of the evil, and not to allow others that don't belong in, but only to know, we have to know and make a delineation. You know, when we were captured in Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim is Motzer, that the walls of around Yerushalayim, around Mitzrayim, kept us in. They were a wall that didn't protect us, but they captured us, and they encapsulated us in a slavery. And we can become slaves to the society around us by allowing us to, you know, and I don't know about you, but when I walk down the street, every single store, they're selling iPods, iPads, iSmarts, iSmart. I mean, everything that you can possibly think, every gimmick, and people are captured by this stuff. And I'm not saying that I don't use it, but I pray that I'm not captured by it. That becomes a habit, an habitual behavior, of course, as we know, can also work as a positive energy, and it can also work as a negative energy. I have a habit when I come into my office, I flip on the computer, I put my pen on the table next to where I'm standing, I have a pad of paper, I put on, you know, I put up the screen, I set up my coffee down in a certain place. So I have a certain seder. That's a habit. And it's a good habit because it saves time. But then there's habits that become like an addiction, where you become addicted to it. So that habit is you form a habit because you need it and you can't live without it. Those are two different versions of the same thing, which is a habit. But the positive energy, of course, saves time. The negative energy obsesses you to the point where you negate all of time, only to become obsessed with the use of that habitual behavior. A wall around us can encapsulate us and capture us, or it can be a wall that we knock down and allow us to become free, or it can become a wall that needs to be there. You know, we have to have know what our limitations are. Everybody has to have limitations. Everybody has to have boundaries that we don't cross, which are the boundaries of social and human behavior that allows us to have a typical normal relationship with each other. Even people who have Down syndrome have to learn to have those kinds of behaviors. But nonetheless, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm definitely still there.
Okay. No, because you haven't said anything. And usually, you know, you jump in on me, and I know that you're still around. Okay, I was just hoping the whole thing didn't go dead, and I'm just sitting here, you know, wondering what happened. You know, it's kind of like everybody has when you go out in the sun, you put on a hat, you know, and some sunscreen, and you put on sunglasses, right? And that protects us from the harsh rays of the sun, and well, it's supposed to. The neshama does the same thing for the body. I mean, that's the purpose of the neshama, the body serves as the sunglasses to the neshama. So it's like a reflector, so to speak. So The neshama, though, is something that we carry around with us in this world that was given to us as a gift. And the gift that we were given is something that we have to take care of, and it's not ours to take in terms of removing it from this world, but it's our job to take care of it and to nurture it and to only expose it to those things that a neshama should be exposed to, and that you would be proud for the neshama to, at the end of days, return to the creator of all neshamas and say, this neshama was properly cared for. It's not up to us to say that this world is too difficult for me to deal with, and I want to put an end to my time here in this world. You know, it's funny. Somebody was talking with me the other day about this very thing, and I was trying to explain to him, and I realized that in the midst of this discussion, the concept of a neshama in this world is not a matter of, you have no rights. You know, we say it's my body, you know, and my I have all the rights to the body, and the neshama and the soul, and the abortion and all these things. You know, chas v'shalom. I don't want to get into all that right now, but I want to touch on it because the neshama that was given to us really isn't ours. It is ours in that it was given to us to use in this world, and to take that neshama, or to take the life that we are living within, really is murder. And if you're going to ask me about, is it ever okay? It's not, because one of the Ten Commandments clearly says you're not allowed to murder. And if the body and the goof that you're walking around in, you're completely attached to, if you didn't like what was going on in someone else's life, you wouldn't do a Jack Kevorkian, Yamash Shmo, on them. You know, you wouldn't take their life because they were unhappy, and maybe you might sympathize with the pain they're in, but the pain that we're in, there's a reason for it, and I'm not saying that pain is good, but that's what we're told, that pain allows us to come to another level, and every drop of pain that we experience in this world eliminates all of the massive amounts of pain that we would otherwise experience in the world to come. And it says that, you know, our neshamas have to be purified, and there's an entire treatise that's written in the Gemara, and it's followed up in Kabbalah, that the Bahir actually goes into a whole explanation of what happens. I don't know that we fully understand what pain is. And I'm not a fire and brimstone kind of guy, because I want to tell you what my reading on this always has been. You know, if you sit in a room and a guy tells you, you know, if you do this and you do that, you know, God's going to this, that, and the other thing to you, right? And, you know, when you go to the next world and so forth and so on. But really, whoever's saying that to you is really talking to your ego. Because in the next world, you don't have an ego. So if you can imagine yourself as an egoless person, and then think about what kind of pain you could possibly be in, you're going to be in a world of hurt. You know, it's not the kind of pain that you and I can really understand and relate to. It's a pain that exists because we don't have a self. We have something that is attached completely to God and godliness. And in so doing, and in so being totally one and united with Hashem, the pain of having been separated in order to be reconnected is an enormous amount of pain. They say that, you know, when an Hashem is torn away from Hashem, it's a chelek ha'kayim mal mamish, that it's a segment of godliness in actuality that's torn apart and put and breathed into the nostrils of a human being, and that's how life and life force comes forward. The fact that it was a very painful tearing away and that the neshama didn't want to come in this world, and yet when it gets here, it really doesn't want to leave. And once it cracks that shell and says it does want to leave, then it means that it's missing its mission in this world.
Mm-hmm.
So my answer is, find your mission. And your mission is, to start with, find the mitzvah that your neshama has an affinity to. 1 second. I already made a bracha before the program started, so I'm sipping on my juice. I'm juicing here in Jerusalem. Anyhow, so if you have a mitzvah that you can find yourself and find a way to get rid of yourself, see, the only reason you're in pain, the only reason we are in pain is because we're thinking about ourselves. But if we eliminate ourselves and we recognize that that the self is what's keeping us apart as human beings and as friends and as lovers, because we love each other, but we can't allow ourselves to get too close because I got to protect myself. Now, that's a wall that we got to get tumbling down. We got to tumble those walls down. The wall that's protecting us from evil and from negativity and from, you know, of bad energy, that wall, okay, that's got to be there. But it's a like a translucent, opaque sort of a wall, and it's very strong and very powerful, and we have to protect ourselves with it. But it also has to be willing to know when there is goodness around us and allow that in. And yes, we do get tricked every once in a while. Yes, I understand that. But you know what? You have to allow yourself to be open and to feel the other person in your life in order for you to be able to succeed and to be able to come close. And once in a while, yeah, we make mistakes and we get used or we get hurt. But, you know, once in a while is worth it. Because the other times when it works, it's an amazing thing to be close to other people, to be able to tell them that you love them. You know, I read an article, I don't remember if we talked about it last week or not, I was just speaking with someone about it, that, you know, we raise children and you know, when we go out on a shidduch and we go out on dates, you know, we get to the point where we learn how to say, I love you to a spouse or a potential spouse, you know. And for the whole first year of being married, you know, I love you. Oh, I love you too. And, you know, we're all reassuring and everything. But somehow what happens is the children are born and we forget about that I love you, because in America and in romantic love, that means one thing only. But when it comes to understanding truly what the word I love you is, we have to understand that our children need to hear that every single day. I think I mentioned last week that's the growth hormone. You know, you want to give yourself your children a growth hormone. Tell them every single night that you love them, and that's the way in which I heard an amazing story this week about a man who was a very wicked man who nobody in the family loved, and nobody had anything to do with him. Nobody, you know, he was a very wicked guy, and he stayed to himself, and he had nothing to do with anyone, and he eventually passes away. And they found his son, they needed him because they wanted to tell him about the Leviah. So the son came, and he made all the arrangements as if he was making an arrangement for a tzaddik to be buried, and he had gave him all of the kavod and all of the honor of being a very holy man. And after the man died, the son took over the father's all of the father's wealth and all of his ownings and holdings, and he became, and he was so generous with the people, and he was so kind, and he was so somebody came over to him and said, you know, what's going on here? You know, your mother raised you, obviously, you know, in such a, because his mother passed away also. His mother passed away at a very young age, and he was, and he, you know, eventually had to go out on his own, and his father raised him, but his father was such a grub, you know, tough guy. He says, listen, I know how my father was to the whole world. He says, but I can tell you that every single night, because everybody was impressed with the son, you know, like, how could this son come from this man? And the son said, every single night that I went to bed, my father came upstairs and tucked me in, and he leaned over and said to me, I love you. And he said that that had such a profound impact on him that no matter what his father did beyond that in the world, that I love you was so profoundly, had such a profound impact on that he became so secure in his knowledge that somebody loved him that he was able to go out and become a very generous and kind and open and enriching kind of human being. And we have to remember that lesson. You know, don't stop saying I love you, you know, when the first year of the, you know, of the marriage, and when the children come, continue saying I love you. Don't be afraid. It's not anything to be afraid of. And that's one of the things, we're never going to break down these barriers of hatred and anger and evil without love. And the truth is, at this time, at this point in time where we see all of the evil and negativity that's going on around us and all of the pain that everybody's experiencing, yes, the heart is the source of love. The brain is the control tower. It tells you this is an appropriate kind of a love, this is an inappropriate kind of a love. And we have to know that. That's important. But when you love, love fully. Know that the heart is coming that the heart was the source of the milk that you received when your mother nursed you when you were very young, and that is the source of the nurturing that you receive, and that love that came to you, if you would just start finding a mitzvah, find one mitzvah that you want to do and go start doing something for someone else, and your problems are gone. You know, you have to take your body and your neshama and go right to the face of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God Himself, and in a concrete, tangible way say, I want to do something for somebody besides me. And then your prayers will be answered. All your prayers will be answered. Do something for someone else. Mitzvahs are not things that we do, are not activities that we do to say that I'm better than you at doing these things. They are ways of expressing to the world, I am part of this world, and that I want to bear the fruit and sweetness of the wisdom of this world. I want to share it. I want to share that sweetness and that generousness in a tangible way. And how do I do it? By helping somebody. You know, if you have to reach out and help someone, you know, the old story of helping a little old lady across the street, the idea of a mitzvah, it says mitzvahs gereres mitzvahs, that one mitzvah will lead to another mitzvah. It's a hidden thing until you reveal it. Once you reveal one mitzvah, God will reveal all of them to you.
Right.
It's the source of everything is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is nothing besides Hashem. That's it. There's God, and then that's it. But if you want to reveal what God put here, you have to cause the sparks to ignite. And the only way that you can do that is by reaching out and helping somebody else. Or doing something for someone else. As long as you're sitting around thinking about the pain you're in, and the agony, and the anguish, and the angst, and all of the sorrows that you're going through, you're missing the whole point of being here. And it's all just flying by. And another day is gone, and another moment has passed, and we've missed it. But if you start doing just one blinking mitzvah to help one other person, in a tangible way, mitzvahs geres, mitzvahs HaKadosh Baruch Hu will come and bring and reveal all of the other mitzvahs to you. and not only bring you all the mitzvahs, but it will all come to you. Everything will come to you. You know, is it a mitzvah to have a job? Sure it is. Is it a mitzvah to earn a living? Yeah. Is it a mitzvah to have a loving and caring relationship with the people around? Absolutely. But it doesn't start by just sitting around saying, my gosh, I missed out on everything. It's all gone by. I can't deal with it. It only happens because we get up and say, you know what, today I'm going to go out, I'm going to see somebody needs something, I saw something, they had somebody was telling me there's a movie about called Pay It Forward, where you do something for somebody and then the next guy does something for the next guy. Well, that's pretty much the way it works. But the bottom line is, when you open the door to do something nice for somebody, I was standing in line one day, I'm not going to say who this was because the lady in Crown Heights, and I reached in my pocket and lo and behold, the old gag, I don't have my wallet with me. So I said to the guy, can I put it on the cheshbon, make a cheshbon or whatever? And the guy started to do it, and the lady standing next to me said, no, no, no. And she pulled out her checkbook and said, how much is it? I said, no, what are you doing? She said, no, no. She said, please, allow me to do it. And she wrote out a check for the, $360-some, whatever it was, and she paid the bill for me. And I said, I'll be by, right away tonight. I'll come in. No, no, no. She said, don't worry. Come by tomorrow when it's convenient. Now, was this lady doing it for what reason? She did it because it was the right thing to do. Should I have been a big, egomeister, I could have said, no, lady, you're not paying for me. I'm a big shot. No, I'm going to take it. You know what? She did it. And not only that, she said, please, don't even tell anybody, not tell anybody that she did it, but not to tell who the lady is. And not to say anything to anybody about it. She didn't want anyone to know. She wanted it to be done, quietly. And I want to tell you that had a profound impact on me, because this lady and I have, we've spoken, how are your kids? And she knows my wife and so on and so on. But for her to have just pulled out the checkbook like that without any, I want to tell you something. Many good things happened to her after that. And she doesn't even know that I know that. I happen to know her husband, who happened to mention to me that on a certain time, a couple weeks ago, just like a couple weeks after this happened, he's telling me this whole story about something that happened to her in a very good way. And I realized that I now know something because I can't tell him, because she asked me not to say anything. She wants it to be her mitzvah. If I tell somebody about it, then we thank her. And she said, see, once you thank somebody for doing something like that, you take away the mitzvah. That's like giving ribbis interest. We don't pay interest on a loan. And it's not the money interest that she was worried about. It's the thank you. You do something nice for somebody, and if you turn around and say thank you to them, you take away the whole mitzvah. Why? Because you just paid them for it. And here, I'm not paying her. She didn't want me to thank her for it. And she didn't want me to tell anybody else about it, because she didn't want to be, people say, oh my gosh, look what you did. You did such a nice thing. That's ribbis. That's already payment for what she did. She didn't want that. Being repaid for the money that she gave me, 100%. Next day, I went over there. I dropped the check by. I told her that, that it was a great, great mitzvah. And she said, she took the check. She said, thank you very much for bringing it. Bang, done. Story over. Okay? Now, I'm just saying, that was a small thing, a relatively small thing, but it could be in somebody's life a majorly big thing. Why?
Right.
Because I didn't have my money with me, and it was a Thursday night, and the next day is Shabbos, and I'm going to come home and tell my wife, look, I got all the food over there in the market in a basket, and I got to run back to the market. That's not putting me in a good light, is it? Uh-oh. Then I'm going to have Shalom Bias problems. We don't want that. Okay. So our lives hinge on our ability to say to the next guy, here, let me give you a hand, let me do something for you, without expecting a thing in return.
Right.
It could be a very small thing, just helping somebody, I know my wife was telling me one day she fell in New York. She was in Brooklyn, and she was in a non call it a non-Jewish neighborhood. I don't want to go into the specifics of this, but you can read into this one. It was a non-Jewish neighborhood. She fell down, and the kids walked right past her, laughing. Now, I have to say to you that given the opportunity, I don't know anybody. I don't know anybody who would have done that, such a thing. Everybody I know would have stopped and lent her a hand and helped her to her feet and found out how she's doing. Now, it could be that you're the kind of person who might have walked past somebody, or you might avoid looking at someone who's in trouble or having a problem or you don't want to deal with it. That's what I'm saying. Don't avoid giving a hand. Allow yourself to come out and become part of life, not because of yourself. Get rid of yourself and work on somebody else's self. And that's how we open our hearts, we open our minds, and we share the collective connection. It is our bodies that keeps us apart. Our bodies do not allow us to mesh, to become entwined with each other, because our bodies are separate. I have a body, you have a body. But right. If I allow myself to assist you and help you and do things good for you, it's not myself and not my body that's keeping me apart any longer. It's the actual stepping out of myself and not thinking of a self person, a selfless person, and I'm allowing myself to interact and become involved with another person, and that's the closest you can become to another human being, is by doing something to them without expecting absolutely nothing in return for doing it. Anyhow, we have the 9 days, and boy, are these tough days. You know, God was really good to us. He gave us some really hot ones. And I want to tell you that it has been very, very difficult, several days so far, and the end of the week is coming. But one good thing, we're all going to sit down to a big Suda on Tisha B'Av, and we're all going to eat meat on Tisha B'Av this year. And that's an amazing thing, because it says clearly in Shulchan Aruch, you cannot eat meat on Tisha B'Av, and you can't eat meat in the 9 days. And it says you can't sit down and eat anything on Tisha B'Av. And guess what? We're going to do it all. And, okay, so if we do it right, we won't even have to fast on the 10th of Av, which begins, by the way, Motzei Shabbos. So for those who don't know, Tisha B'Av actually falls out on Shabbos. And because it is a fast day, the only day that we fast actually on Shabbos is Yom Kippur, because that is a prescribed day that actually falls out on the calendar specifically on Shabbos, and there's no alternative for Yom Kippur. But with Tisha B'Av and with all other fasts, there is an alternative day for those days, and the alternative day this year will be Sunday or Motzei Shabbos. And I know my wife said to me a very interesting thing. She said, oh, thank God we don't have to eat the boiled egg and the ashes. That's not one of her favorite meals. But everything else we have to do. Since we don't actually prepare for a fast on Shabbos, so we can be besimcha the entire time, and the more simcha that we have on Tisha B'Av itself this year, the greater potential, because you know who is born on Tisha B'Av. It says in the Gemara, right? So he's either a year old or he's an infant. He's just born. But, Mashiach is there is a Mashiach in every generation, and he's born on Tisha B'Av, and therefore we all have the opportunity to share in the great simcha and the great joy and the great love that we have to offer each other on Tisha B'Av this year itself, which falls out on Shabbos. So, did you have anything to say today? I mean, I just realized you're a non-interrupter.
No, well, the thing is this, I think that, we have an increased listenership, Eliezer, since you've been broadcasting from Yerushalayim, and I think more people want to hear what one particular individual voicing the, his opinion and advocating for those who might not necessarily be able to voice their opinions. We're talking about, you know, the distinguished children and young adults in Yerushalayim. On their behalf, you're speaking for as well for the rest of us who want to see a change of heart. We've got a couple minutes left. I just want to go back to one thing. Maybe you can comment on this. Now, you've mentioned so many times that the difference between those who have Down/up syndrome and the rest of us, quote-unquote, normal people, if there's such a thing anymore, is that they have an extra chromosome by the 23rd pair or link, I think. And
21st pair.
So, okay, see, I'm still learning. And I also
I don't know what that 23rd pair is. Boy, that's a real weird one.
Yeah, but anyway, this idea that, you know, I want to go back to Seltzer's writing here, but the idea of when people experience an actual physical transplantation of the heart, a heart transplant, how they actually get the sensations, they can actually adapt some of the original heart-mind-body context even after being transplanted into a new body. So project for those blessed listeners listening out in the world from Israel to all around the world, what do you think it would feel like if they got the heart of one of the children you've helped empower? What type of feelings would they have as opposed to the feeling they would...
First of all, they'd get up every morning happy. And they would be totally delighted to be in this world. They would hug everybody. You would begin to hug everyone. And you would begin to smile at everyone. And you would be absolutely overjoyed to be doing whatever it was you were supposed to do that day. And the people around you would feel delighted to be with you and to be around you. I cannot say enough for... There's a fellow who actually wrote a book called If People with Down Syndrome Ruled the World. And, I mean, what an amazing concept. You know, if everybody would get the heart of a person with Up syndrome... And get rid of the, you know, that black heart that they're all walking around with today, and, you know, but put in this nice fresh pink heart that, you know, just only knows love and joy, and would be hurt when people say, you would be hurt when people said, you know, negative things to you, and you would have a tremendous feeling of pain when people made fun of you, but you would walk past it and realize that, hey, I'm lucky to be who I am. And so, therefore, that person has the problem, not me. You know, people with Down syndrome don't live by what you think of them. They live by what they think of you, and they don't have a negative view of people. They don't have a negative view of the world. They only have a positive view. I suppose we could really pound something negative into them, you know, through constant repetition and through negative or positive reinforcement or whatever, but it doesn't work because ultimately the goodness is what comes out of a person who has Down syndrome. That extra chromosome is the love chromosome. So I don't think we need to implant the heart. What I think we should do is get a vaccination and start injecting everybody with the love chromosome that, you know, that every person with Down syndrome has in the world.
And
we're going to go around singing and dancing and being happy and joyous, and the whole world's going to get infected with this chromosome.
And by spreading spreading this Ahavas Chinam, we're bringing redemption. I just want to really interrupt you in a very nice way. I got some feedback from Cindy Greenstein Vaughn from Colorado, I believe Denver, Colorado, Eliezer. And in terms of this extra chromosome, she remarks, "Amen, amen. If only people had an extra chromosome." Good point.
Well, I'm gonna bottle the what do they call that stuff? What do they call it? The pills you take from the health food store. What do they call those? Alternative. There's a phrase they use for the all the products there. You can't call them medicine, so they call them
homeopathic remedies.
Supplements.
Okay.
So I'm going to get the love supplement. Okay. So you know, send your requests into PO Box.
And we want everyone to.
What we have to do is we really do have to start working on that. I'm going to go to the Technion this next week after the 9 days. And by the way, went in, sat down with the lawyer, you know, about signing for our first for our offices here and a place to live. And we sat down yesterday and we talked and everything. And he pulled out the papers and he looked at me and he smiled and he pulled the papers back and he said, "I know, not during the 9 days." So yeah, even in Israel, you know, during the 9 days we don't sign contracts, we don't you know, we had some furniture we went and looked at today, and I was talking with the guy and he said, "Oh no," he says, "you just tell me which things you're interested in." And I told him and he said, "Okay," so he says, "just see me next Monday." So yeah, everything is being held off until after the 9 days, you know, in Israel, yeah, you can do that. In America, you know, if you still want it, you better, you know, put your down payment on it. So, you know, don't even go look. But the beauty of this thing is that we've got so much scheduled for after the 9 days now. Mm-hmm. So I guess we'll have, hopefully we'll have news by next Tuesday. We should have already sat down and signed a contract, picked up some things, and done some other stuff and so forth and so on. So I don't want to get into too much of the details of it because, you know, I don't want to bring an Ayin Hara on it or a Morris Ayin or anything like that. But the bottom line is that we have to now go and bottle it. You know, everybody should wake up in the morning, wash the Nagelvasser, thank God, and, you know, and infuse themselves with that extra love chromosome, you know. And, you know, take that love chromosome and share it. Don't just put it inside and say, "Okay, now I feel good." No, it's not there for you to feel good. It's there for you to make everybody else feel good. That's the difference with my love chromosome, okay? This is love potion number not mine. Love potion number mine? No, not mine. Wasn't there a song like that? Love potion number mine.
If we could put this love potion into Kool-Aid, this is the Kool-Aid we would encourage everyone to drink. For those of you
this
old enough
the
to remember
Kool-Aid
the 60s.
Test, right.
And
this is
how
the right
can people,
Kool-Aid.
I'm sorry, how can people help you and your Yisroel Chana Tova make the final preparations for the contracts and all the business zachen after the 9 days? Tell them how they can connect with you and help you in your courageous, heroic efforts to bring more heart-to-heart into the heart of creation as it is rooted in Jerusalem, the heart of all creation.
They can't. They can't do a thing because I'm going to do something for them right now. I am going to give them an opportunity to do something. And that is, if you'd like to really help out, and if you want to do something during the 9 days to change the Gezeirah and bring Mashiach and help out, this is an opportunity of a lifetime. Why? Because this is the love potion. This is an opportunity to do something in actuality that will bring you mitzvahs, gereiros, mitzvahs, that will give you an opportunity to reach out and help another Jew, and help another Jew who is already out there helping people. And now those are the people who already have this love chromosome. And that is send a check, a generous check. And I want to thank everybody who has continued to do so. And the checks are, thank God, getting bigger and bigger. And the people that are sending them are getting more and more actively involved and want to. And, I mean, I'm getting people who want to become partners, real partners.
Amen.
If you want to send a check, write it out to Heart to Heart, HEARTTOHEART, and send it to 616 East New York Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11203. That's Brooklyn, New York. That's Heart to Heart. 616 East New York Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11203. Or you can send it to P.O. Box 80, Brooklyn, New York, 11225-0080, Heart to Heart, P.O. Box 80, Brooklyn, New York, 11225-0080, or you can send it to 383 Kingston Avenue, Suite 232, Brooklyn, New York, 11213. That's heart to heart. 383 Kingston Avenue, Suite 232, Brooklyn, New York, 11213. Or you can go to our website, which is www.hearttoheartamerican.org, and follow the directions there and do what many people have been doing and use your credit card and, or your debit card, whatever it is, and send you know, follow the instructions on the donation page or the, I forgot what it is, I guess it's the donation page, I don't know what it says anymore. Or you can call us at 718-778-0111 in New York, or you can call me in Yerushalayim. Oh, here we go. Let's see if I get it right this time. 011-972-545-7599. That's 011-972-7599. I said it wrong the first time. 011-972-7599. Or you can call me on my cell phone in Israel at 054-391-5226. Or you can call me on Reb Don's cell phone, which is
1-347-355-7676. And although it might be a little inconvenient to call me from Israel, I'll give it to those in Hebrew. 1-347-355-7676. And I give lechem a kasher la Rav Goldstock at his number 972-7675-7677-599.
And my cell phone.
We'd like to end off in. I'd like to thank. Yes.
A telephone, Shali. Or it's 054-391-5226. I'm sorry, I should have done that. If I'm giving out an Israeli number, I should have done it that way. The telephone, Shali, by Yerushalayim. Okay, up to you. Sorry.
Anyway, I just want to conclude the show by thanking Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Goldstock of Heart to Heart. American, and you can connect to his wonderful website as well at www.hearttoheartamerican.org. And hopefully next week, Eliezer, we're going to be doing the show live from Yerushalayim, and we're going to find out, you know, there's two opinions, if the 3 weeks will be like Chol HaMoed and the rest of the year will be like Yom Tov, or the whole year will be like Chol HaMoed and the 3 weeks every day will be a Yom Tov. I'm looking forward, either day, either opinion, I'm looking forward to
manifest
before.
I like the third opinion. Let's make the whole thing Yom Tov, everything.
Well, I think any day Mashiach comes and we have the universe redemption, it will be a Yom Tov. We're going to end up with one day by Yutman Matisyahu. And hopefully next week we'll reconnect with Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Goldstock. In the meantime, everyone, Ahav Echad, one love, Goral Echad, one destiny, Kolano, for all of us, Badarchi Shalom, in a peaceful way, Darchi Noam, in a pleasant way, Lukolano, Lahamshik, to begin with the Birchus Hashem Yisbrik, with the blessing of the Most High, never say give up. Remember, don't overestimate your weakness, and don't underestimate your strengths. Blessed souls, take care, everyone.
Sometimes I lay under the moon. I thank God I'm breathing. Then I pray, don't take me soon, 'cause I am here for a reason. Sometimes in my tears I drown, but I never let it get me down. So when negativity surrounds, I know someday it'll all turn around. Because all my life I've been waiting for, I've been praying for the people to say that we don't want to fight no more. There'll be no more wars, and our children will play. One day, one day.
Children will play.